Let me just do a hot start here. So hello and welcome to episode 286 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. This episode will be released January 3rd, so Happy New Year, 2022. I am Rollo McFlugel, and with me is my co-host Slappy Jones. Show notes page for this episode will be mcflugel.com/286. And this will be installment number 5 of the Get On Zero series. And this week, we welcome Laser Hoddle. Welcome to the show, Laser.
Hey, y'all. It's a pleasure to be here. I just want to say it's a refreshing joy to get away from current events and get away from sort of the heavy reality of reset and focus on sort of the delightfulness of just trying to live on Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's been a real white pill for me and a lot of people too. We have, like, the world's crazy. It's falling apart, or at least it seems like it. And there's all sorts of bad stuff happening, and friends and family are just going berserk. And, you know, you like literally can't just go out and live the life that you want to live. And, you know, people's jobs are being threatened. All this, you know, I don't have to go into it. We all know. But, like, we have the solution that is staring right in front of us, that it gives us a way out. It gives us something to fight back with.
Without the solution, I'm pretty sure I'd be like losing my mind every day.
Yeah. I would be kind of scared and terrified.
Feeling helpless, feeling like there is no option.
Yeah. So what kind of laser, how'd you get to being to Get On Zero? Tell us a little bit of your background and your story. Yeah. and what led you to making this move and trying to evangelize it.
Well, let's see. So my whole story is, I'm a software engineer by trade. I wrapped up a career, right as COVID was kind of hitting peak hysteria in 2020. And I took that as okay, this is my exit. This is the time to leave big tech, because within the company that I was working at and across the industry, on the West Coast at least, the sort of progressive fervor had reached a fever pitch, and COVID was pushing it over the edge in terms of what was tolerable if you were a conservative, if you were someone who believed in individual rights. And so I kind of took it as a hint of, okay, I need to be done with software in the big tech context, in the Silicon Valley context. And, I became glued to the implications of COVID, the timing, the Great Reset, sort of trying to zoom out and understand what was happening to us all, the journey we were all being placed on. And I started to realize that it was that the last 2 years has a lot more to do with us entering the greatest sovereign default of all time than it does, designer influenza. and so I've spent a lot of time spreading that signal, sharing the fact that actually what is occurring is that the balance sheets of nations have hit an endpoint, and now they're doing the very dangerous business of pausing society so that they can reshape the rules and reboot, upgrade the state. So my message has been to folks, move down the risk gradient and opt out of this at every layer, so that you can, focus on the Bitcoin era, so that you get a head start with you and your family and start thinking about your household on the order of centuries, thinking about your household name, and realizing that the pendulum is going to swing back towards strong nuclear families that stand the test of time. So you have an opportunity. You know, the Great Reset doesn't really need your help to fail. You need to know about it so that you can navigate it and opt out properly, but it doesn't need your help to fail. You can simply move down the risk gradient in all the ways that matter. Maybe you move out of the city. Maybe you go for like a Linux or a de-Googled phone instead of using big tech. You dump Gmail. So you can move down the risk gradient in all these ways. And that's sufficient to allow you to actually build a life that's focused on sovereignty, that's focused on Bitcoin. And so I practice what I preach. Everything that I talk about are things that I've done in my own life. I got to the point where I had solved 99% of my problems, right? Like, okay, all my monetary energy, 99% of it is in Bitcoin. And first I did it quickly, right? Like, so I put my retirement in like grayscale because that was fast, right? Once the orange light bulb came on, like boom, fast. But and so you maximize exposure, and now I'm rebalancing that exposure to move out of paper Bitcoin into self-custody Bitcoin. And so, you know, I'm looking at my total monetary energy in the way that it's exposed to Bitcoin, and I'm refining it. And so, you know, I've already opted out in terms of tech. I my whole household uses Linux and privacy centric services that you know employ end to end encryption. So we communicate over like a matrix or a signal, and we use Proton Mail on our own domain for our family office, and we don't use any big tech or any listening devices like Alexa, and we use vehicles that aren't computer vehicles, and I don't live in the city anymore. I live out in the country. And so, you know, I've kind of done most things that would allow me to not listen to and not pay it. You know, there's not really COVID going on where I am. But then I got to the point where I'm like, well, you know what? I still have like a 2-year runway in my checking account. So that's my story. You know, that's how I got to, because as a retired person, I have a longer runway. So that's how I arrived at the, I need to do something about this. Like this isn't good. And that's how I arrived at the, what's out there, you know, started asking questions like, do I really have to wait until Bitcoin is made legal tender, or is there some, can I start just living on it now?
Yeah, that's awesome. It's funny how kind of the mindset changes, or at least it did for me, was that for the longest time, it was like, well, I'm going to HODL, and I'm not going to spend any of my Bitcoin until Bitcoin becomes money, which, you know, not that there's something necessarily wrong with that, but at the same time, it's like, well, wait, I'm just going to like wait around for someone else to do that. How about I just make that my reality right now? Because yeah, that's not going to happen until people start deciding to do that too. So, you know, you can't sit there waiting for someone else to make the moves that you want to happen for it to, affect your own life.
Yeah. Like to a certain degree, we enjoy the fiat of the dollar hegemony. So to a certain degree, we're like victims of that because we've lived that experience so long. It's easy as a Bitcoiner to look onwards to like El Salvador and be like, oh, well, it makes total sense that they would take on Bitcoin as legal tender. And yeah, you know, but there's kind of a storm element to Bitcoin. It goes up and down, and it's mostly going up on average over time. I mean, it definitely is going up on average over time, but like they should brave the storm because their money's completely broken. They're being, you know, and they're, you know, we're essentially exporting our inflation to these very poor countries. So yeah, it makes total sense. And as that's not very controversial as a Bitcoiner, it's like, yeah, that's a better alternative to just do it. So they made it legal tender. And I don't think there's any Bitcoiners that would look at like Venezuela and be like, you know, oh, they definitely should not live on Bitcoin. Like, of course you should live on Bitcoin if you're in Venezuela. Right. Your money is completely broken. But if you start talking to dollar Bitcoiners about living on Bitcoin, it's sensitive. It's a very sensitive subject, and to be fair, it's slightly complex because, you know, it's easy to kind of look at El Salvador and be like, oh, well, that's nice. They have legal tender laws, so they can just treat it like money, and we don't have that in the U.S. We have to treat it like property. But I started to realize for myself, like, okay, as the United States is losing dollar hegemony, meaning that foreign countries were no longer buying our debt, so we became the main buyer of our own treasuries, and the implications of that are we will lose our ability to export our inflation. This is happening at the same time that politicians are forgetting that money doesn't grow on trees. They're becoming addicted to money printing. And inflation, you know, the price of essentials is starting to rise significantly. You have people talking about price controls in 2023. And we know from history that price controls always precedes a total loss of confidence in government money. So, you know, I'm kind of like, on one hand, I'm like, okay, it's not legal tender yet. We've really enjoyed the dollar being fairly stable. On the other hand, I'm seeing play out what has played out over and over in history, which is we're setting up for a local currency collapse in dollar terms. And so that's a difficult situation. And for me, a part of the process was kind of dispelling this feeling inside of me that, you know, the dollar's safe.
Yeah, there's this interesting normalcy bias that I realized I had, and realizing that it seems like a lot of people have, that just because like we're using the dollar means that it's like, wow, it's pretty good, and we talk about how inflation's happening, how it's bad, but like, you know, we saw what happened. We see what happens with the pushback we're getting with Get on Zero, and there's, you know, saying there's pushback. There's also a lot of people that are open to it and dipping their toes in it and going in with it too. So gotten positive feedback too. It's not like, you know, everyone's saying we're crazy, but you know, this idea you hear people say like, well, I want to have an emergency fund with dollars for like 3 months or 6 months worth of expenses. And like, you take a step back and you look at it from this other lens, like how you're talking about, and you go like, that's insane, man. Like, if it's supposed to be an emergency and like when you really need it, and you can, like, the bank or the government could just cut you off from it. But at the same time too, if inflation is 20-30% right now, or even 10%, like, you have to service that and put a lot of money into it just to maintain purchasing power for 3 to 6 months or however much you want it. So it's really like, man, any sort of savings that you want to do or maintaining of your value, like, you just can't be in dollars.
And you're assuming that liquidity is a non-issue. I mean, if you look at the way that money fails, you know, first they flood the market with money to solve every problem, and people start being productive. They stop being productive because they forget the reason to, because there's so much money. Then inflation starts to heat up. Price controls come in because it becomes a political issue, you know, almost like the market is taking advantage of the money. So then you lose products on the shelves. Shelves become empty. Then liquidity dries up. Basically, no one wants the money. And so, like, to assume that as the U.S. is losing reserve currency status, the dollar hegemony is sort of dissipating, to assume that we won't have a similar story in terms of liquidity leaving the room is sort of arrogant. I mean, let me put it this way: you know, in these countries that have money fail, you know, it's not uncommon, like, when you get your paycheck, that everyone rushes out at once to go purchase things because they know the consequence for holding those monies for days or even hours at a time can be extreme. You might go and you might try and pay for groceries over the phone, or try and, you know, lock up the price of all these groceries, because, you know, if you go at a rush when everyone's trying to spend their paycheck, that by the time you check out, there's either going to be very little products or the price is going to be much higher. So, what I tried to do to defeat my own normalcy bias is say, like, okay, are we the, you know, is that the exception or is that the rule? And the more I looked at history, the more I looked at the way money fails, I realized that's the rule. The rule is, you end up having an outcome like that. And so, okay, well, then is being the reserve currency, is that, like, immutable, or do you lose it? And everything in history says you lose it. So, Because you have to imagine on the other end of that, there are countries that feel like they're getting screwed, right? Because they're eating your inflation for decades. So they're done at the end. And that's what's happening in regards to the U.S. Like the reason the Fed is buying more than half the treasuries and that's only going to go up is because the countries on the other end, they don't buy it. They don't buy the thesis on treasuries right now. So and this is a problem across the West. It's a problem across the whole global monetary system. So, you know, the unfortunate reality is, okay, the stay humble, stack sats meme, that's a low inflation meme. That's the harsh reality. And the get on zero meme is a high inflation, hyperinflation meme.
Right. You don't want to be the one holding the bag at that point. And I mean, we're already several steps into this process with this hyperinflation or, you know, kind of real bad thing happening with the dollar. I mean, the obvious thing was when they locked everyone down because of the COVID stuff, I mean, they stopped production. They stopped global production. I mean, and we were all saying that. We're all commenting on that back at that point, saying like, this has going to have real bad consequence, especially when a lot of Western economies are, what's that called, when they're just-in-time deliveries with stuff. It's not like we have massive stocks. You're eating through any other supplies that you have. And then, you know, they just print massive amounts of money. And so meanwhile, everyone's going like, well, oh, I made a lot of money in the stock market this year. I'm doing very well. But they don't realize that like everyone's doing very well in the stock. Well, quote, yes, and very it, well
it's
in the stock
a mirage.
Market.
It's
right.
A mirage.
And then now I work, it's like the tractor meme for this show. I work in the oil industry in refining and we like a lot of equipment, like the lead times are 2 to 3 to 4 times out further than they normally would be. And the price is similar. So like, we can't buy equipment that we need. Like it's just like materials aren't out there. Like copper, nickel and brass. It just like, isn't there. No one can get their hands on it. It's super expensive. And like the quotes I'm getting back for stuff is just absurd. And so, you know, I can't imagine that, oh, I'm just unlucky in my industry. Also, you know, if you want to look at refining, it's a pretty important industry for the country and the world. And so I'm sure that those are global problems there. But we all, like everyone knows about the supply chain issues. I mean, what's going to happen when stuff starts breaking down and there's nothing left to replace it? It's just, I mean, it's kind of scary to think about. How close are we to this edge?
Yeah, it's when the money ceases to work, the stuff is forced to become the money. And then you have real problems. And we are past the inflection point. You know, there's an inevitable outcome of government money failure. And the whole idea with COVID is that you can, instead of the world, instead of the world realizing that the monetary system that the world relies on has collapsed, instead they have this war with COVID, and we're all wrapped up in this tragedy. And so it took the 99% velocity of money and it sent it almost to zero. And so now we have a great excuse for why things, you know, look and feel like a currency collapse, monetary failure. But we all have a great reason for that. We say, oh, it's the pandemic, right? But all the, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And this is a duck that is shaped like a collapse of the monetary system that the West relies on. And so like that's the reality. And so in a weird way, it's a blessing because it's like they've slowed it down for you so that you could prepare, and they've been preparing. I mean, you could argue that the leaders of the world, they're choosing the lesser evil, right? So there's the absolute chaos of sudden and enormous scale collapse, Or there's this careful, controlled destruction of like, okay, let's have a world pandemic instead. And you know, it's absolutely brutal and evil and terrible, but maybe that is less destruction in order to kind of let the system down as nicely as you can. But from a Bitcoiner's point of view, the reason that I tie this in is you don't have the luxury to assume that fiat is stable. Right. And for most of Bitcoin's life, we've been able to just say, yeah, of course, save in Bitcoin. Right. So learn a skill, use value for the world, save your time and effort in Bitcoin. And that's a good, you can still live on fiat. But more and more, I had this insight that, maybe the best time to learn on Bitcoin, to learn to live on Bitcoin is before your local currency collapses.
Yep. Yeah, you don't want to be kind of drinking from a fire hose, learning on the fly.
And from a purchasing point power point of view, maybe there's not that much of a difference, right? Like, okay, you get your paycheck and pay your bills and go get your groceries, and then whatever's left over, you know, you back saps, you know, you're buying dips. Okay. So then the bottom in the dollar drops out, or it melts up. Either direction, it's the same difference. When people realize what's happening, the outcome's the same. The problem with that, you've only been affected for, you know, 1 week, arguably, of like disruption. But the problem with that is you actually don't want to scramble when everyone's scrambling. That's the worst time to adjust your lifestyle to monetary collapse. So there's a lot of like, it's very on brand in terms of what I'm telling people, which is you should front load the pain of adapting to this massive change we're all going through. Like, you should front load that and learn to live on Bitcoin now, because then you're kind of, you know, you're kind of fully loaded into the lifeboat. You know, the lifeboat works best when all your limbs and your feet and your luggage is in it.
Yep. Yeah, you're kind of riding still moored to the ship, but already in the lifeboat. So when the ship starts to sink, you just kind of untie and push off, whereas that's everybody right, else is trying to crowd into the couple life rafts that are left.
Yeah,
and that's a good analogy.
Like, the solution space for this is so thin, they're not going to be able to take on everyone in that moment. I mean, that's probably the truth of it. And so it makes sense to get in and you know, whatever kind of companies or teams or developers are kind of like, oh yeah, this is interesting, let's build on it. You know, there's a strong incentive to sort of get in there and say, hey, we need this kind of glue, you know, that have 100% of your purchasing power in Bitcoin, hold fiat, you know, on the order of, you know, seconds, not days and weeks, and automatically convert into Bitcoin. And then you have glue in order, you know, it's cheesy, but like a Bitcoin bank, right? Like, okay, I'm 100% in fiat. I have maybe like a percent of my net worth on like a custodian that's a Bitcoin bank. And like, wow, isn't it useful that I have like an ATM card? I can go get fiat dollars if I need. And isn't it useful? I can like go, I could pay off a credit card bill with it, or I can send a wire or an ACH. I can do like a check deposit, right? So like, I have the basic banking stuff. Like, would that let me ride out the fiat era while still being a Bitcoin citizen? You know what I mean? And I think the answer was like, yes, that would be quite useful. Because, you know, we don't know, like I have a thesis that maybe the super cycle's around 2030, like it's this kind of great fate thing, because the Great Reset wants to be fully launched by 2030. So maybe what's going to happen is Bitcoin wins enough mines, or people go to it because they can't trust each other. They can trust Bitcoin. And so Bitcoin slays the Great Reset, and there's your super cycle. Okay, well, that's a nice thought. And then afterwards, we're all living on pure Bitcoin. You don't need any glue. But I just think it's more realistic that the fiat system will have a slow, painful death, and you're going to need some mechanism to interact with it. And so like a Bitcoin bank to me is like, there's something interesting there, and it solved my problem, which is like, hey, can I take all my wife and my purchasing power, that last 1%, and just say, you know what, I've left the fiat system. And the answer was yes. Now, is it good? No, it's terrible right now. Like the tools right now are bad. They're not good. They're crummy to use. And it's like not convenient. But I did my whole career in software, and I can tell you, like, I see what it could be in pretty short order. In like a year from now, it could be something that's like pretty effortless. And you know, I can see folks looking back and saying like, oh yeah, that seems pretty obvious that, you know, what Bitcoin did for my savings account, it can do for my checking account. Like, if the math works for the savings, why wouldn't it work for the checking?
Right. No, yeah, it's number go up. So it's funny. It's that, that meme with the bell curve for the intelligence, and it's on the one side, you got the, you know, the idiot caveman, the other one, the super smart one. It's just, yeah, number go up on either side. It really can be that simple. So what are like, yeah, what you just described, it's something that would be great. We're not quite there yet. So what are you doing right now? Like, what's your strategy? Because that's kind of what we want to have on the show is I have my strategy, and it's shifting. It's changed ever since I started the first episode. And then I last week talked about, I'm actually doing a little bit different now. So, because
the current shape of what my household does, I mean, it's scrappy. I'm not going to lie. Right. I think it'll get smoother, but I'll describe the current shape of it is. So we put our expenses on a 0% 15-month credit card, and it has a very high limit. And what we do is we put our monthly expenses all go through that credit card. Groceries, phone bill, everything goes on to that. And then we've moved our checking account. And remember, I'm retired, so I had 2 years runway just in checking. That's been moved into a Bitcoin bank. So the one that I evaluated what was out there, and I saw there were some guys not too far from me in Austin, called Level. And they basically, their idea was, let's build a, Bitcoin bank where you can still interact with the fiat system, but you have a dial and you can choose how much dollars you have, how much Bitcoin you have. And so what I do is I transferred all my checking into them. And then I hit that dial to 100%, just they store it all in Bitcoin. And they're kind of neat. They don't charge you fees to go from dollars to Bitcoin. I think I'm paying like, I think it's like a annual or monthly. There's some type of service fee, and there's fees for different banking stuff. Like, I think if I do a wire transfer, like these type of, there's banking fees, but there's no like conversion fees between Bitcoin and dollars. So like, that's useful because it's like, okay, our expenses for our household go on these credit cards. Okay. And once a month, I will convert a certain amount of Bitcoin to dollars to cover the credit card bill. And I just pay the minimum because I have a 15-month 0% APR card. So I pay the minimums, and there's no issue with interest. So the idea is that at the end of the 15 months, I would pay it off in full by converting more Bitcoin to dollars paid off in full. And the whole thesis is I realized, okay, once I went from like stacking sats to living on Bitcoin, my whole mindset changed to like a mindset of defending sats. And so I realized like anything that you could do that would let you hold sats longer would ultimately mean you would have more in the end, because as Bitcoin appreciated in purchasing power, you would have to part with fewer and fewer sats to settle up in the fiat world. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, right now, I like Right now it's kind of a pain because I have to like manually convert Bitcoin and then pay the credit card bill. And so like I was jammed, you know, I did startups my whole career. So like my natural instinct was like, hey, you know, get a hold of the Level founder and like just see what they're thinking. Like, and when I first talked with them, like they had, you know, they still had like a Litecoin and Ethereum support. And I was just like, you know, I definitely wouldn't trust anyone who was confused about money with my checking account. But once I talked to them, I realized, okay, from their point of view, they thought there might have been something there. They tested it and found out there wasn't something there. So they're going Bitcoin only. So it'll be a Bitcoin only bank. And so I went through like the things I would want to see, like, okay, can I withdraw that from my checking account and create like a, you know, like let's say you put $200,000 in checking. You don't want that much in custody, right? You want to be able to pull some out and hold it in cold storage. And could I do that with this? And then could I deposit it again? And they would recognize the sats, which is critical because you want them to be able to auto calculate your capital gains at the end of the year. So you hand that to your accountant or upload it to TurboTax or whatever. And so they could do that. But the main thing they don't have is they don't auto convert your Bitcoin to US dollars when you actually do something with your bank. And so that's the big thing I want. And they say they're going to try and ship that early 2022. So, you know, ideal setup is my household uses fiat credit. That's where our bills go. And then once a month, I just do something with my bank, right? I just pay off the credit card. And in the background, automatically, it converts Bitcoin to dollars if it needs to. And like, to me, that's a nice balance where I'm not, you know, it's like, okay, I have a checking account just like every other fiat person. But instead of storing the purchasing power in dollars, I'm simply storing that purchasing power in Bitcoin. And I can like ameliorate the custody risk because even though we're talking only 1% purchasing power, it's still like, you know, I'm a Bitcoiner. I don't want to have more custodied sats than I need to. So having the ability to kind of like throw that in like a mid-grade wallet, like maybe it's like a Blockstream Jade. It's fairly simple. I can have green on my app and you can have like a 2 of 3 Blockstream Jade. So it's like a reasonable balance of security, but it's very easy. It's like, it's fairly close to liquidity. It's not quite like a deep freeze wallet. It's like a, you know, semi-warm wallet. Right. I'm like, okay, that ain't bad. That's quite good, right? I can still, in a disaster, I can still recover it, but they don't, you know, my checking account doesn't have, if Level dies, I don't lose that full hypothetical $200,000, right? It's like, okay, maybe I only have like 20,000 in there at a time, right? And like, okay, this ain't bad. This is reasonable. And so that's what I would want. Like if they can get it where if I send a wire, it just automatically converts Bitcoin to USD dollars and does a wire. If I do an ACH, if I swipe at the ATM, and they just give me dollars and then for no fee, right? For no fee, take some of my Bitcoin, spit out dollars into the fiat system when I need it. And then of course there's a tax element, right? Because it's property, you know, we're not lucky like El Salvador where it's money, it's legal tender. So there's a tax element. And so, you know, you don't want to be, you know, the more transactions you do, the more intensive the accounting gets, right? Or the more you have to think about, worry about, even if they're doing the accounting automatically, it's just, there's a mental burden. And so like, I find the sweet spot for me is like expenses go on credit card. You pay off the credit card once a month. Hypothetically, you have 12 taxable events a year. Now, like, you have 12 taxable events a year. If you make money, of course, the government wants to profit share on that, right? So if you make money in dollar terms, the government's going to want you to cough up the whatever your tax rate is. Okay. If you have a savings and you're not living check to check, that's completely acceptable. And your purchasing power is appreciating. So there's no You know, assuming you have a savings, there's no like fears there. Assuming they generate the tax form automatically, it's like, okay, I can hand that to my accountant, or I can upload that to TurboTax. Okay, that's acceptable. And so that's like the sweet spot for me. Like, I think I could sail out the fiat era. I could sail out the next, like, this decade with this arrangement, knowing that, yeah, Bitcoin might have a bear market, and then my bills relative to people who are living on dollars bills are more expensive, right? Okay. But on average, Bitcoin goes up about 200%. So as long as you have a long time, you know, a long horizon view, and you say, oh, actually, you know, I have enough purchasing power within my family to think about the 5+, the 10+ year time frame, you should actually end up ahead, checking account or not, because, yeah, if you're not stuck thinking about the next 6 months, the next year, you're able to think further on, then the same number go up technology that makes your savings account appreciate in purchasing power will do the same for your checking account. So, you know, that's kind of where I am. That's where my household is. We, you know, we have $0. We haven't touched a penny in 6 weeks now? So over a month. And Bitcoin's been crashing, but I've never slept better. Instead of focusing on, like, is Bitcoin mooning or crashing, all I'm doing is thinking, like, okay, how far away are we from currency collapse? And it doesn't look like it's 10 years away. It looks like it's more like low years, you know, like on the 1 to 3 years away. So I'm sleeping excellent, knowing that we are, you know, Bitcoin citizens. And it doesn't really bother me if you know, my credit card costs a little more this month to pay off, because I know on the order of, you know, 2 years, it'll be a non-issue.
Right. Yeah, you're an interesting situation because you're retired. So I think it's the obvious, like, you're going to have to, if you're going to go all in, you're going to have to liquidate some Bitcoin, get back to dollars, and you're going to trigger a capital gain. The way I changed a little bit now is that I'm doing something similar, is that, like, basically everything goes on a credit card. I do some other things like pay with Moon. I, you know, buy a Visa card over the Lightning Network and pay for online stuff with that. But what I'm doing now is I have a home equity line of credit. And so when the credit card bill comes, when the mortgage comes, or when a couple other ACH transfers out of my checking account come, I just transfer from the HELOC, the exact amount goes into the checking account. And so when that transfer happens, it just grabs that and it goes to zero. And then I can just kind of float on top of that HELOC until my paycheck comes. And then I use Strike. And so I, you know, kind of have a rough idea of how much I need to keep over in fiat to pay off the HELOC. And then the rest just goes into Bitcoin. So I don't have to, you know, incur a capital gain. Now, before that, I was selling Bitcoin, but I was doing it in a way that I was not going to get a tax form from anybody. So it was up to me to report any gains I had. But since I think I went on zero when the price was like 60,000. So I think I would be incurring all losses. But yeah, because I got some feedback from a good friend of mine who's a good Bitcoiner. And he was concerned a little bit, or at least his perception of how we were talking about get on zero, that we were, and it's not the typical thing. Like, he wasn't saying, like, we've gotten from some criticism, oh, you love the IRS, I don't want to pay taxes. Well, none of us want to pay tax. Like, of course not. But he was saying more like, well, how much of a risk is it to be kind of basically doxing to the IRS that you own Bitcoin? Like, what kind of risks are you looking at there? You want to talk through that a little bit? Do you kind of see where I'm getting at with that?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. So, well, you know, I count myself as a privacy advocate. I
there's privacy in sort of all aspects of life, especially now during reset. And you know, that's part of why I've recommended folks take their communications and put them on decentralized end-to-end encrypted chat. That's why I recommend folks move to like a privacy-focused email, because you know you're feeding the corporate surveillance machine, and you know, the optics from the government, it looks a lot like they're trying to sort of mimic what China did, which is to say like this public-private partnership between the state and kind of like a high-tech fascism or a corporatism, where these corporations win forever monopolies in their respective industries, and that's provided by the state, and they work very closely with the state as a consequence of that, in order to run their sort of, you know, it's a little closer in the political spectrum towards like a totalitarianism, or it's like a social scoring technocracy, this kind of world. That's what the West looks like they're doing with China. So you have good reason to sort of lift up your privacy in a bunch of ways. And I think in the future, you know, freedom will be measured in terms of privacy. And so there's like, in Bitcoin, there's a privacy movement, and it's very important because, you know, a lot of what's coming out of there, especially things like join market, I actually believe in what it's doing. It's bringing forward privacy to settlement. And I with the trajectory, like, I don't think it's unfair to say that these tools will eventually proliferate within the wallet space, within, you know, the average tools that people use, such that forward privacy will become the default in Bitcoin settlement. And when I say forward privacy, I mean, I can settle some money to your account. Maybe I buy a car from you or something, and you're not able to look into my wallet and see what I've done, right? So I have that basic level of settlement privacy. And that's so critical for Bitcoin to graduate to being the standard money of the world. And so I think that the privacy NIMs and privacy space, they deserve a lot of credit for that. And I'm very supportive of that. And additionally, I think like this whole idea that we need an escape hatch that allows people to acquire sats without know your customer, you know, KYC regs, you know, without the government having a mapping to every Bitcoin that you own. That's so critical to prevent the absolute tyranny of the state. You know, this idea that every family or individual has the right to have some type of get out of a hell kind of emergency plan in case their state goes pathological. So for example, like I've been geeking out with home mining, and we're setting up a mining thing. And so you might say, well, Laser, how can you mine if you're already 100% in Bitcoin? And it's like, well, we don't have any dollars, true, but I still pay an electric bill, right? And so like and to be fair, I have all KYC Bitcoin right now, because the entire adoption curve is entering through KYC. Let's just be real. Like, that's the way that it is. You know, I can't convince my grandma to shuffle cash to the ATM because, you know, KYC is scary. It's KYC is a reality. But I like to think of it as, well, wouldn't it be nice if my household had like a multi-generational insurance plan against a pathological state? You know, you think of like World War II Germany. You know, wouldn't it be excellent if, you know, let's say you were a Jewish family, wouldn't it be excellent if you had invisible get out of Germany tickets that you could hold on to forever, right? That would be really nice. And so what my family thinks about is like, okay, let's mine at home. We can actually rebalance from 100% KYC Bitcoin, and we can start building a no KYC allocation. So we can do the math and say, you know what, we really want like 2%, 5%, who knows, 5% of our wealth to be invisible sats that we can hold on to in our family line in 1,000 years, because that will always give us insurance against a calamity,
an absolute a disaster at the government level or whatever, some misfortune that leaves you in a position where it would be really useful to have these type of sats lying around. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to invest by paying an electricity bill to build a no KYC stack. And of course, I do want these tools, the mixing tools, that community to be thriving. And so, you know, I think everyone should think about building a no KYC stack. That being said, there's a very kind of like popular, like a culture has emerged, this kind of like never KYC culture. It's almost like this KYC shaming culture where it's, you know, KYC Bitcoin is not real Bitcoin, right? Like you gotta get cash and shuffle it to the ATM, and you gotta try and build this anonymous stack. And if you don't do that, you're not Bitcoining correctly. And, you know, I reject that for multiple reasons. Like, first of all, if you custody your Bitcoin, that's all that matters. It's real Bitcoin once you custody it. So if you're holding it in your wallet, you have the keys, you control when and where it moves. You've achieved the benefits of Bitcoin at that point. So I reject it for that reason. I also reject it because it's just not what's happening. Like, it's not attached to reality. The reality is that people will choose, you know, Bitcoin's a lot to understand. So when people start, they start by stacking sats in a way that's easy. And it's a progression. Eventually they understand enough that you could be like, hey, listen, you might want to build a no KYC stack. And that's towards the end. So I think of it like an emergency. It's a good emergency stash. But it's not really, you know, the entire adoption curve is going to enter through KYC. So just to pretend like that's not the case is just you're in denial. You're not working with reality at that point. It's better to say, hey, rebalance to a responsible no KYC stash, because that could be really useful in the political environment that we're in. Also, like, you know, if you had 90% of your wealth in no KYC Bitcoin, like, it's problematic to sail out the fiat era that way, because you really don't want to pay your KYC bills with your no KYC sats, right? If you're paying your mortgage off with these invisible, you've gone through all the pain to get these invisible sats, now you're paying your mortgage off. Well, you're putting yourself in a very precarious position, because any basic investigator could actually, you know, do a little bit of footwork and see that, oh, you have this wealth coming from over here. So it disappeared on one side, and now it's coming back to your KYC bills. So, you know, I like to think of no KYC as an escape hatch. It's an emergency fund. I think it's absolutely vital that escape hatch is healthy and growing. I think it's vital for Bitcoin to become money. But at the same time, I don't believe that we should be doing this KYC shaming culture. And like, furthermore, like, it's almost like this kind of cosplay, like pretending that Bitcoin is illegal, right? The fact is, Bitcoin is completely legal. You can buy Bitcoin. Just because you provided your ID to do it doesn't make Bitcoin less legal. And it does mean that the KYC Bitcoin you buy, you should play straight and narrow. You should pay taxes when they're owed, right? There's no benefit, and there's only liability if you try and be fancy and you try and get away with something when it's KYC Bitcoin. So that's my advice, which is like, the fiat era is going to be here a little. Most of the adoption curve is entering through KYC. When you buy KYC Bitcoin, fly straight and narrow, and you won't have a problem. Now, if you actually think about that for a second, there's an insight, which is, you know what the best way to eliminate KYC persecution is? Because that's what privacy folks are saying. They're saying, this KYC persecution is so scary, you should be telling people not to buy Bitcoin until they can figure out how to buy it secretly, right? That's what they're saying. Well, the truth is that the best way to eliminate KYC persecution is to have broad enough adoption such that it becomes politically untenable, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah. Like, it's the idea, don't jaywalk by yourself. J- jaywalk in a crowd of 20 people.
Cause, yeah, you know. So like, what's the adoption like for Bitcoin in the U.S.? Is it over, I think it's like over 80 million hodlers? Is it over 100 at this point?
Well, I don't know. I have no idea.
I'd be surprised if it was that high.
Okay, so it's growing. As more and more right. families realize they need to protect their assets, it'll grow. The higher it grows, the better, because the fact is the adoption curve will enter through KYC. And so you don't want to be this small little group. You want it to grow. And so as it grows, you know what? It's kind of like firearms. So firearms are KYC, right? I want firearms to be owned as broadly as possible in the U.S. I want families to be gun owners, to feel empowered to protect their family from tyranny, from danger, from harm. And so I want it to be so broad that there really is no politically viable way to do broad KYC persecution. Now, does that mean I don't want no KYC firearms to exist? No, I think it's a great escape hatch. Like I really like there's like this whole geeky culture of people messing around with like 3D printing and stuff. Like, yeah, that's such a strong thing for the safety and empowerment of families long term. So of course I want that escape hatch to be healthy and growing, and I think it's fun, and the culture around that makes a lot of sense. But I wouldn't tell people don't buy a KYC firearm because you should only be printing them. No, I think everyone should own firearms because I think it's a net positive, and families should be able to protect themselves. And if we all own firearms, good luck. You know, I think 2020 was the best year firearm ownership ever. So I think these political events have a way of reminding people they need to take their own sovereignty and safety of their families into their own hands. And so I feel the same way about Bitcoin, right? I want broad ownership of Bitcoin. I'm a realist. I recognize many people are going to go easier ways, so they're going to end up with KYC. I want that to be extremely broad. Of course I want the escape hatch to grow and to be healthy, but I don't want to be disillusioned. I want to work in the real world, work with Bitcoin's actual game theory. So like that's where I sit on the privacy thing. Pro privacy, pro no KYC. I don't understand the never KYC thing. I don't understand the KYC shaming. I think it's just disconnected from reality. And you know, the last thing you want to do if your grandma's like, hey, I think I need to move my savings to Bitcoin, is to like, you know, scare her away with the dangers of KYC. It's like, listen, my grandma has a revolver. She's on a list somewhere, you know. I want her to own Bitcoin.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Every once in a while, I'll get a reply on Twitter when I say like, buy Bitcoin, and you have someone write asterisk, earn Bitcoin. And it's like, well, yeah, that's great. I would if I could, but like, if I quit my job to try to go work someplace where I earned Bitcoin, I would take like a 90% pay cut. it's just stupid. But I guess to go around back when I was, I'm with you on the privacy stuff and the KYC issue. I guess the question was about like, you know, just like you're adding when you basically dox that you're a Bitcoiner to the IRS, you're opening up another threat surface or attack surface from the state or even just, I mean, the state's going. I mean, I think if you buy Bitcoin on any KYC service, even though they might not have to be reporting to the government or the IRS that you have Bitcoin because you haven't created a capital gain event, like the government knows you have Bitcoin. But outside of that,
if they order, if they allow the Treasury to look into every checking account with over $600, you don't think they're going to find out people, you know, sending orders over BISC and you know, all these right. ways they think they were being clever. The fact is any investigation work can find out that you're being fancy. So you should keep it pretty simple. You have to choose between the type of tyranny that allowing money printing to steal your family's, you know, the type of tyranny and disruption that allowing money printing to siphon out your checking account versus the type of tyranny of having, you know, your accountant have to deal with the headache of the IRS. I mean, I don't have an, I don't have a great answer for, like, of course you're trading one part for another. Yeah, there, you know, that is the tax treatment of Bitcoin. It's property. So if you're buying it, just like if I buy equity, you know, just like if, you know, you're now you're having to deal with the IRS and, you know, but does that mean that you shouldn't buy Bitcoin, or you should tell people not to because they should buy it secretly? You know, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, it's a pain, you know, is what it is. Eventually I think we'll see legal tender, but at the end of the day, the math either works or it doesn't. The IRS is not going to come take my Bitcoin out of my hardware wallet any more than the ATF is going to come take all my family's firearms or, you know,
right.
Especially when you think broadly speaking, like, it's just not how it works. Once you have possession in that type of way, the probability of broad tyranny almost goes to zero. I mean, really, that's the entire point of Bitcoin, is that you hold it, the bearer instrument. And so more than no KYC, KYC, what ultimately matters is getting people to custody their set, not using a custodian when you don't have to. Holding personally 99% of your set, most, you know, your savings, you should hold. And that's far more important than whether or not, you know, you bought Bitcoin by stacking sets with Swan and like, oh no, the government knows you did that. Well, it's legal. Versus, you know, you took, you know, you sent money orders to someone else's account and bought it over BISC, right? Like it's.
Yeah, no, I agree. A lot of it's, well, the other thing too, with some of like the privacy stuff, when people think that they, all right, they bought their KYC Bitcoin and then they coin joined. And so now they're safe from the government knowing what they did. But like if the IRS, you know, wants to harass you about stuff and you come back and say, well, I broke the heuristics on my UTXO. So until you can deterministically say what I, you know, what came out of the other side, the response is going to be, LOL, we don't know what any of that means, but you have Bitcoin. So, you know, and we think you owe us this much money. Give us that money or you're going to prison. Like,
yeah, well, once fiat enters your checking account by way of your career, your job, that is KYC monetary energy. Okay. And then they will track that all the way down till it's spent. And you know, that's kind of the way it is. So you can choose. Do you store your monetary energy in dollars or do you store it in Bitcoin? The element of, can you come up with a catastrophe fund of hidden sats? I think home mining is probably one of the better ways to do it. And I think it's an insurance fund. I think every family household should do it, but I wouldn't conflate, you know, Bitcoin is about, it's about eliminating seigniorage. You know, some say, oh, you're supporting the state because you're paying taxes. If the government had to use taxes to fund itself, that would be an improvement. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think we would have Bitcoin.
Like, the government doesn't even need to tax.
No, I mean,
it's punitive.
No, yeah, exactly. It's the government funds itself off of money printing. Taxes are just a braking mechanism that prevents the 99%, the poors, from overheating the economy, and that just maximizes the Cantillon window. So anyone who's very close to money printing, they get this maximum arbitrage. And taxes provide for that, right? Because other words, the velocity of money would be very high, because, you know, you have this helicopter money, right, with no braking mechanism. So you got to have taxes in money printing economics. It is punitive, but it's not where, you know, Spook Force does not pay their salary out of taxes. The Space Force, that's coming from the money printer. So, you know, I think, if you zoomed out a little, you would realize, okay, so to force the government to fund itself on taxes is the equivalent of destroying the government as we know it, because it would basically result in a tax rate that would be like 99%. And, you know, if you look at history, that immediately results in a revolution. So the fact is, if you eliminate seigniorage and the government has no choice but to fund itself over politically negotiated explicit taxes, it basically creates a feedback loop that will downsize the state beyond recognition. It might be 100x, it might be 1,000x smaller. It might still be a big government, but 1,000x small. I mean, that trajectory, that's kind of what we're here for. So, you know, tax evasion, I mean, I don't generally recommend it, just because, like, you think you're being fancy, you're not. You get paid from your salary, you have KYC dollars, then what, right? If you so I don't recommend tax evasion. I think it's not a very good long game. Yes, the IRS is going to learn that you have Bitcoin if they want to, right? You know, whether or not you're buying on sats or you think you're doing something really fancy, they could learn about that and you're in a pickle. So really what we should do is focus on broad adoption. We should focus on ending seniorage by having families opt out by storing their time and energy in Bitcoin, holding their own keys. That can lead to a true phase shift for humanity. And so, you know, I get it. I get the anarchist kind of dream of, like, this extreme freedom, you know, and we want it where, you know, we don't want to wait. We want the state to go away now. But I think the realist view is, like, listen, eliminate seniorage. That feedback loop will force a downsize of the state 100x. If we end up with something that's like a medieval HOA, I'd be okay with that. Like, right. Natural law restored. Yeah, that'd be fine. I'd be okay with that. Funny enough, I think you do veer towards a kind of absolute freedom in the long run, a kind of free market replacement for the state long term. But there has to be, we have to be able to connect now to there. And you think through Bitcoin's game theory, I'm more interested in helping people who are kind of like already figured out how to save in Bitcoin. Now what? And the answer can't be like figuring out how to pay your mortgage with gift cards. Like, that can't be the answer.
Right. So do you think it's kind of fair to summarize the last 15 or 20 minutes by saying that, like, the threats from the state or the state having your information and just being bumbling idiots and, you know, having that information get, lost to somebody else who might be a bad actor, that's not a big enough threat to prevent you from doing what you need to do to be all in on Bitcoin? So, like, if you're like my situation, I earn a paycheck twice a month. I have access to a line of credit where I can just float my expenses on that line of credit. And so I just, when my paycheck comes, I pay down that line of credit to make it back whole. So I don't have any, you know, no liabilities and no, but also no fiat, and then just buy the rest on Bitcoin. So I can avoid all of the IRS stuff. If you don't have that option, or you don't have that, ability to do that, or you don't have an income or something, if you're retired like you are, then, like, it's worth it still to incur all of the nonsense with the IRS, we'll call it, and deal with the taxes and the privacy loss there.
Yeah, I think so. Like, leverage fiat debt to the extent that you can, because that's to the average person, that's going to be the softest, easiest money that you can get. And so, you know, you can use things like a mortgage, you can use things like 0% APR cards that really help you not just rack up 1,000 transactions, right? If you're retired and you don't have so what you described makes a lot of sense, because it actually, on balance, it ameliorates kind of like the accounting issue to a large degree. But like, let's say you don't have that, let's say you're doing what I'm doing, where it's like, okay, you just went all in. You can still use credit to make it where you have about like 12 transactions a year. Now, you know, is there a danger with filing your taxes that show that you bought and sold property? I don't think so. Bitcoin's a legal property. It's like equity. I'm not too worried about, like, Michael Saylor being hauled off to a black site. I'm not too worried about my family being hauled off for buying and holding property. That's how I think about it. I think that the adoption of Bitcoin's definitely going to come in through KYC. I don't see scaring anyone off because KYC exists. KYC is dumb. It's silly. We can defeat it by just having broad adoption. Same thing with firearms, right? I wouldn't stop people from getting firearms because of KYC. I think everyone should have firearms. The printing, the 3D printing industry is rad. It's important. I hope it, you know, it basically makes it where gun control is dead. That's what I think about no KYC. You know, it's a geeky thing that happens at the end of your Bitcoin progression. I think it makes it where Bitcoin control is effectively dead, in the same way that 3D printing guns make gun control effectively dead. So that's net positive. But like, you know, that's not where you start. We have to be realistic in terms of it's a progression. And heck yeah, I think in the times that we're in, simply living on Bitcoin, you know, 12 transactions a year, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah. No, I think that's, I'm right there with you.
What would be a big deal would be basically having to adapt and scramble during local currency collapse. I don't think that's worth it. You know, every dollar that you hold now, you're like, oh, I can hold for days, weeks. There'll be an inflection point where that will punish you too much. You'll be looking to move quickly and not hold that dollar, not hold that fiat. And the problem is, by the time you get there, everyone's thinking the same thing. And so it has a way of escalating fast. So, you know, I think the way I would end it is the best time to learn to live on Bitcoin is before your local currency collapses. And yeah, if you don't have legal tender in your country, that's no reason to stay in your failed currency. I'm not going to stay in Bolivars because they haven't made Bitcoin legal tender.
Right. Nah, I think that's the right way to think about it. We need to take a step and kind of look outside of, from an outside, try as best as we can, try to take an outsider's perspective on what's going on and to realize that, like, man, we're driving on the wrong side of the road and we're just got used to, like, dodging cars coming in oncoming traffic. And someone says, hey, you're driving on the wrong side of the road. And so you start turning the wheel to get to the, on the right side. So you're flowing with traffic and you hit the rumble strip and you get scared and you go right back to where you were. Like, oh, I don't want to, that rumble strip was terrible. Not realizing that it's like what you're doing is insane. And until you're on, you kind of take that lump potentially of driving over the rumble strip, which is doing that conversion into Bitcoin from fiat when you might have some short-term volatility issues if you don't have that much savings. But once you're driving on the right side of the road, then you kind of look back and you go, how was I doing that before? And why was I doing that? Because we're just in such a topsy-turvy, upside-down world. The fact that we can't hold the money or else, you know, we're just going to get impoverished. It's just upside down. It's the opposite. It's opposite world. It's the opposite of what it should be. And until you get to a point where you're able to actually start holding good money and see what that does and how that changes you and how that, you know, allows you to, like you were saying before, plan ahead into the future, like it's really life changing.
Yeah.
It's really awesome.
I do think Get on Zero is like, it's trailblazing a little because it's these Bitcoiners who have been all in, but they're still living on the dollar. And it's like, what's next? And I do think it is kind of a trailblazing effort in that sense. And so you could argue it's not for everyone. You should start with stacking sats. And I think that's reasonable. Like, Bitcoin's a progression. Start by saving a little in it because it'll, you know, once you take that orange pill, it'll change you. You know, it does lead to eventually not being a fiat citizen. You count yourself as a Bitcoin citizen. I'll convert to the local shitcoin when I need to, right? Whatever the local shitcoin is. And so, you know, it's some people think that of every other currency in the world except the dollar. It's just the Get on Zero people realize the dollar's not so different and it's only a matter of time. And I think, yeah, you know, if you have no savings, right, if you're just living paycheck to paycheck, then Get on Zero, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're in dollars or Bitcoin, you're in a bleak situation in terms of you need to focus on earning power and savings immediately. And you need to hustle. Right. And get to where you have a savings because it's, you know, whether you're on Bitcoin or dollars, in the environment we're in right now, it's dangerous to be living paycheck to paycheck. So, you know, solve for savings, You can lift your time horizon. You can look further out. You can do the math. The math either works or it doesn't. You can choose scramble during currency collapse, but at least you don't have to deal anymore with the IRS or something. You know what I mean? Like, or you could say, oh, I'm going to have to upload this form to TurboTax, and, you know, just like I upload the other forms. And, oh, and it has the benefit I'm able to leave the fiat system early. My family is able to adjust to living in this new way. So we're proactive. We're taking on that pain ahead of time. And then this decade's going to feel a lot easier for you, right? You're going to sleep better. And that's where I'm at. For me, it's a mitigation because, I think the fiat era is not long for this world. I think it's 1971. I think historians will look back and say, oh, you know, that lasted barely until 2030. Maybe the peak collapse is 2024, 2025. I really don't want to figure out what that's like. I want to have my family's monetary energy in the most liquid, hardest asset, hardest money of all time. And yeah, if I have to upload an additional form to the IRS to do it, whatever. We're still going to mine at home. We're still going to build an emergency stack of invisible sats, right? So on balance, it just makes sense. Think through your own situation. Do the napkin math yourself. Think through, you know, don't fall for the trick of like, it's not stable fiat versus the wild storm of Bitcoin. It's the familiar storm of Bitcoin versus this, the end of fiat, which you have no basis for understanding. You know, maybe if you're from South America or something, you have an uncle or whatever who's seen money fail. If you're an American, you don't understand it. You don't understand it.
Yeah. No, it's, once again, right there with you. It's we're like, we have the, you know, we're kind of blessed that for whatever reason, a lot of us have figured out a lot of these problems and see the world the way it is. And it would be a real shame to have that knowledge and have that foresight and not like act on it to protect yourself and your family by delaying, you know, adoption on the Bitcoin for what we all probably agree on is the inevitable outcome. So, I think that's a really, really good message that you have is that, I mean, we see this, it's this freight train of the destruction of the dollar is coming. Don't wait until it would be like, you know, you want to buy this toy for your kid for Christmas and going shopping on Black Friday instead of just like making other plans and going to the store when there's not going to be mad rushes of people and waiting to go in when you're going to be, you know, stampeded to death over it. I think that's a really good message for people
like
here.
I know the pain. I know the pain of the accounting headache, right? I know what that looks like. It's a known pain. I don't know the pain of the global monetary system collapsing, right? It's pesky. I tell my accountant, here's this form. He asks me questions. I might have to punch something in. Like, that is pesky. You could get like an audit. That's no different than if you're buying Bitcoin, right? Like, so, you know, that's no different if you're buying stock. So I want to take the familiar storm of Bitcoin and that stuff compared to the unfamiliar storm of this whole Western system coming down. And, you know, everyone needs to make that decision. But also, like, the math is compelling. At the end of the day, the math works or it doesn't. So if you just do the math for yourself, that should be enough to kind of tell you that there's an opportunity cost to actually living in dollars. And the closer we get to the end state of the dollar, the higher that opportunity cost is, right? Because, that last sliver of your net worth could be going 10x, 100x in the next decade. Humans are bad at exponentials. So you might think, oh, it's only 1%. If that 1% grows exponentially in purchasing power, that's a massive opportunity cost and not, you know, position yourself that way. So, you know, beyond just like, hey, you know, this whole thing might come down, there's also just the math. I mean, if the math either works or it doesn't, do it for yourself. You'll see, even at a worst case scenario of like half, let's say you had to pay half, it was like confiscatory level taxes. The math even works then because, you know, you either have guaranteed depreciation of those dollars for the hours and days you hold them versus the exponential growth of Bitcoin. You know, Bitcoin goes up a day at a time. So, you know, if you're holding dollars in your checking account a day at a time, you're missing it. That's kind of the point.
Yeah. Did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about or bring up?
Or, I appreciate you guys. I think you know, this is it's a discussion that really matters, and it's a sign of success. Like the fact that we're talking about how to ride out the fiat era. Think about that. I mean, that's where a cohort of Bitcoiners are. We're saying, okay, we know the Bitcoin era is at hand. We know that the rest of the fiat era is uncertain. How do we actually do it? How do we bridge that gap? I mean, that to me, you talk about hope. I mean, that just makes me so excited.
It is a great time. As crazy as the world is, it is a great time to be alive, especially with access to the tool of Bitcoin that we have now.
Appreciate
y'all. Well, Laser, thank you so much for coming on.
Yes, thank you very much. That was great.
Thank you for everything that you've been doing with the Get On Zero movement and with Bitcoin and going out and being so willing to talk about what you do and helping other people. This series that we've been doing, this is the fifth episode. So we've been doing this for 5 weeks now. And I've said this in a couple of the previous podcasts, but this is episode 286. And I've never been more excited. Yeah. Never been more excited.
Yeah.
To be doing this, because I think we finally found our niche and finally found something that we really think we can help people with. And we've been getting good feedback so far. It's this stuff has been useful for people. It has in such a bleak, what could be a bleak world. And there's a lot of reasons for the world to be viewed and perceived as bleak. This gives people a very actionable, practical strategy to protect themselves and their families. And I see a lot of other people out there and talking about all these grandiose ideas and all this other stuff and what they're going to do. And it's just what can I do? That would be great if that kind of stuff happened, but it's mostly stuff out of my hands and stuff that I can't really have much leverage on doing. What can I do right now to help myself? And this is it. This is what we.
Yeah,
it's
scary, but it's not bleak. I mean, it's incredibly. It's a tremendous time in terms of personal growth. We're all being tested. We're all being pushed to become tougher to deal with everything that's going on. And hey, if I was a Venezuelan and I had the insight that, whoa, what if I just started living on the dollar now? mm-hmm. That would have been really empowering. And if I could have helped friends and family just start living on the dollar ahead of Bolivar collapse, that would be, no one in hindsight, that would look like the right thing to do. And I think, you could just apply that same lens. If you suspect your local currency is going to fail, wouldn't it be great to move to a harder currency ahead of time? And so, I think we have so much to be grateful and jazzed about. I mean, I couldn't imagine going through reset, going through currency collapse in the past. You had no other game to play, no other options. You couldn't protect your family's time and sacrifice. It would just be stolen. So we're lucky. We're so lucky. And let me tell you guys, I'm kind of a new Bitcoiner. I got in 2018 was when I started kind of doing it. And y'all were the first, one of the first podcasts that I got into, and I always thought y'all were so prolific, so I'm kind of starstruck to come on.
Oh, wow. Thank you. That's awesome. I would have, man, that's an
honor.
That's
the best compliment we've ever received.
Yeah, that's really an honor, dude. Because you've been on some much more prolific podcasts recently. Yeah. So,
thanks for coming on.
Yeah. So can you tell the listeners where they can find you?
Laser Hodl on Twitter. And I've been doing the rounds on podcasts just to share my thesis on monetary reset, on the Great Reset, on how families can basically opt out, build up sovereignty. And so I've been doing the rounds. I'll probably pause in January and switch to writing, but everything will go up on my Twitter at Laser Hodl, LaserHodl. So I'll see you there.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Laser. And wrap things up for this episode, show notes page again is mcflugel.com/286. We'll link to Laser's Twitter handle there, as well as link to get on fiat, or yeah, get on fiat, get on zerofiat.com, where we kind of coalesce all the information we're doing here. And if you don't want to get on zero, then you can go to stayonfiat.com. That's the website for people who want to hold on to the cuck bucks. So we made that website for you too. So go pick what you want to, the path you want to go on. Yes. So, that's all we got. Happy New Year, everyone. We hope that it is, it's one full of Bitcoin and things getting better. So thanks for listening. We will catch you next week.
Peace.